one of the sets of parents actually said to me, I wish I'd been taught like this. This is so creative. And she said, I wouldn't have given up the piano if my lessons had been like this.
Welcome everybody to another holiday edition of the Topcast. It's great to have you here. Whatever you're doing around the world, and whether you're on holiday or soon to be starting work again, I hope you've had a great Christmas and New Year. In fact, I think we're bringing this out on New Year's Day, so Happy New Year, everyone. Let's hope that 2021 is a little bit better than 2020 was. Now, today, we've got another episode from our archives, and we've tried to choose some of our best episodes over the last 5 years. Can you believe it's been 5 years of episodes? And today, we're going to be talking about how teaching beginners with no books revolutionized one of our members' studios. So in this episode, you're going to meet the fabulous Georgina, who talks about how she's been using the no-book approach in her studio and what kind of a difference it has made. Now, just before we get started too, I did want to mention that we do have our podcast producer role, which is going to be coming up very, very soon. So we're going to be opening up the opportunity to apply for this position around January 8th in the USA, with a start date around February 8th. So if you're interested in this, join the update list. It's at topmusic.co/producer. If you go there, you'll be able to leave your name and your email, and we'll make sure we send out some details when we have the information for you. But I did want to let you know, just in case that's something that would be of interest to you. I can't wait to find out and hear more from you guys about that. All right, so let's get on with today's episode with Georgina talking about No Book Beginners.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Season 4 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. My name is Tim Topham, and whether you're a new listener or a long-time listener, thank you so much for tuning in again. You're listening to episode number 147, and a very special welcome to my Inner Circle Piano Teaching Community members. This podcast is your home for inspiration, ideas, business, and teaching strategies to help support your teaching and grow your studio. And in today's episode, we're unpacking my no-book approach to teaching beginners. Now, if you haven't heard of this or explored it yet, this is an approach I use to delay the use of method books and teaching reading for young beginners aged under 10 for anything up to about 10 weeks. I call it an approach or framework because, as you'll hear in today's discussion, teachers can use this any way they wish, either supplementing their current teaching or trying something completely new by following each of the steps. Today's show notes and a full transcript are available now at timtopham.com/episode147. Where did this idea about teaching beginners with no books come from? Well, it's been a bit of a long journey for me, but I have always questioned the value of teaching reading from lesson one, or even lesson two or three for that matter. Because the more research I did and reading I did about the way students best learn music is that it's much more effective taking on a language acquisition approach. And what I mean by that is that the research seems to be saying that students learn best when reading isn't the thing that they do first. Just like we don't get our students to read or write a new language first. What do they do first? So let's think about what a baby does when they're starting to learn how to speak. Well, the first thing they do is they start making sounds. They start improvising effectively, and they start babbling and da-da-ba-ba-ba-ba, making funny sounds, and eventually those sounds form into words, and eventually the words into sentences, and then they can start speaking the language. They do a lot of listening at this time as well, and they do a lot of copying and imitating. So we've got this kind of process for language acquisition from listening first to trying, to improvising, to playing, to making sounds. And then eventually a student will start reading the language and then they'll start writing the language, with those two things very much last in our list. Now, of course, for those familiar with the approach of Dr. Edwin Gordon, music learning theory approach, you'll know that this is obviously very familiar to you, and I certainly haven't invented it. It's just something that I've researched a lot and I think is by far the best way to approach music learning for beginners. I will pop a link in the show notes to an article that I've written called Why I Teach Beginner Piano Students Without a Method Book. And just to be clear, I do use method books. I use them for all my students because I think the sequenced introduction to technique and reading is really important. All I'm saying is that I don't think it's the thing we should be doing first. I think there are plenty of other activities that we should be exploring with students before we get there. And those kinds of things will be singing and listening and chanting and, of course, improvising. And it's amazing to see both the fun and the engagement and the learning that can come from a student exploring, improvising, listening, singing right from those beginner lessons instead of getting stuck into a method book learning where middle C is. Now, the big issue with taking a more creative no-book approach to teaching beginners is it's really hard to do if you've never done it before. And so what I did about 2 years ago or thereabouts is I documented everything I did when I took on a new 7-year-old boy in my studio. And I recorded everything, I wrote it all down, and I packaged it up into what became No Book Beginners, which is this framework for teaching beginner students for anything up to 10 weeks. And I call it a framework, as I mentioned right at the start, because it's not a structured method book that you must follow. Like all of my resources and thinking in teaching, I never want to direct that you must do this my way or you must do X, Y, or Z. I much prefer to say, look, here's an approach that I've used and it seems to be working really well. I'm getting great engagement. I'm getting deep learning. Why don't you give it a shot? And so using the framework allows you to continue teaching exactly as you do, but you can, of course, try some of these new ideas in your studio alongside what you're doing, or you could go, you know what, I'm going to try this out with my new student. I think he or she is going to really enjoy it. So I'm going to try 4 weeks before I start my method book, or maybe just 2 weeks, and try out some of the activities that I share with you in this approach. And I think it's going to make a huge difference to both the fun that you have in those first lessons and the deep learning that the student will get from delaying that reading till later on. So, what does this approach actually look like? What am I talking about? Well, what you can get access to are 10 modules, because module one is in two parts, 11 modules documenting everything that you can do over those 10 weeks. Okay, so 10 modules, 10 weeks, one lesson per week. You get a video, you get to see me at the piano actually teaching what I'm doing and how I go about it. You get the full lesson plan. So if you've never done this before, you can literally pick up the lesson plan and go, okay, this is what I do first. This is what I talk about. This is what I ask them to do. You get a list of any other resources that I use in conjunction with the approach. You also get the musical scores because there's a lot of improvising, so the teacher needs a score to read from, so you get the full score. You also get backing tracks created by one of the great members of my team, Fraser, who's creating backing tracks for these improvisation activities, so you can just send them home with those to play along with. And I think most importantly, one of the things that really is difficult when you're taking a no-book approach, an off-the-page approach, is what do you actually get your students to do when they go home? It can be a real challenge. So for every single lesson over the 10 weeks, I give you home practice activities for the students to do. And the outcomes that teachers are getting from this approach are literally phenomenal. So in this podcast, I'm going to be crossing over to an interview that I did with one of my Inner Circle members who's been using this to great effect and having great fun with it for the last couple of years. So I'll talk more about that in just a moment. But let me give you an overview of what the weeks look like and some of the things that students are doing. So in lesson one, we're talking about how to sit at the piano, asking them what they can play, and doing some simple improvising. I use an idea called animal improv and also improvising on the black keys with those backing tracks and the scores that you can play along with. In lesson two, we start moving to some of the white notes and we continue with learning, with exploring improvisation and also starting to do some rhythms. By lesson three, they're doing some play by ear activities. They're transposing. They're doing some echo plays and they're learning patterns and the difference between beat and rhythm. By lesson four, we're continuing on transposing. We're still improvising. We've got some great note games and they're doing some singing as well. By lesson five, we're introducing some harmony and bass lines, all again by ear and by listening. We're doing more play by ear, and we also introduce the first of our rote pieces. In module six, we continue with the rote piece. We introduce more harmony. We do something called the breakfast improvisation, and we start a three-part or a three-week series called Around the World Improvisations. And this, as you'll hear when I interview today's guest, has been an absolute highlight. Module seven, they are continuing with another rote piece, continuing with improvising, with harmony, and also the next section of the Around the World improv. By week eight, they're continuing again with the Around the World, moving to a different area. They're learning something like the Simpsons theme, and they're doing some more improvising. By module nine, we're back into the breakfast improv. We do something called the storm improv or improvisation, and we're finishing up the Around the World with the last one of those. And then by week 10, we're doing a wrap-up. We're doing an improvisation. I'm giving you a whole lot more resources to follow, and we're doing a little mini concert with our students. And from after that, you can do whatever you wish. And of course, if you don't want to do modules 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you can skip them. Or maybe you just want to do the Around the World for a couple of weeks or just 1 week. That's totally fine. The great thing about this framework is it's 100% flexible, so you can use it exactly how you want to. Let me give you just a couple of the goals that I have for my beginning students that underpin my thinking with this framework. So here are the things that I want to impart to my piano students in those first 10 weeks. One, that I love music and I love teaching them. Two, that music lessons are creative and exploratory. Three, that creating music is both fun and easy. Four, that music can tell stories, and we do that through these improvisation activities. Five, that music is more than just pushing down keys. Six, that music is art and involves dynamics, speed, and feeling, and all those kinds of things. That singing and moving to music is just a part of how we do things in music education, and I think this is a really important one. If you can get students singing and moving around the room and clapping and tapping and chanting and all those kinds of things right from those first lessons, it will just become normalized. So students don't have to feel awkward about it because it's just how we do things around here. The next one is that playing piano the right way, i.e. with the right technique, is really important. So we do focus on that right from the beginning. Also, that the importance of understanding, feeling, and moving to meter is an important different thing for students to understand, particularly the difference between duple and triple meters. I also want them to know about the concept of home in a key and tonic and dominant tonalities and being able to hear and create bass lines. I do a lot of work with my students on bass lines because it's one of the most fundamental things for them to get used to hearing. If they do it from those first lessons with very simple ideas, which you'll find in this framework, then that can become much easier later on. And the last couple, that music is made up of chords, patterns, and melodies, and students can learn this in those first 10 weeks. And finally, that they can transpose music into different keys without too much trouble if they know a few tricks. So that's why I recommend keeping that method book pretty firmly closed for those first anything up to 10 weeks. And as Paul Harris says, Paul Harris, UK education expert, creativity is central to the development of a young musician. And so with that in mind, the main objectives of this framework is to crucially teach students how to sit properly at the correct height and using the correct arm, wrist, and finger kind of movements. And I like getting students to teach their parents how to do this as a bit of a fun activity at home. That they have a good, steady sense of pulse, so important. To be able to tap a rhythm and keep a beat at the same time. To be able to sing a song and keep a beat on their knees at the same time. To know the names of all the white notes and be able to quickly find any of them. And I've got a fantastic game. If you haven't seen me do my frog and snake game, then find the YouTube clip of me doing it. It's an absolute winner and you can learn it in about 3 minutes. Improvising on the black and white keys, knowing how to tell a story with music, that they can chant and play rhythmic patterns, know the difference between duple and triple time signatures and be able to explain and demonstrate it, and understand the basics of harmony and how bass lines can form the basis of a home key. So all of that is the approach that I use in my Notebook Beginners teaching framework. And I really hope that if you haven't yet explored it, you'll consider checking it out. So I thought the best way to actually get a feel for how this framework can impact you in your teaching is by inviting an Inner Circle member who's been having huge success with this approach to come and have a chat about how she's using it and the results she's been enjoying. So, my guest today, she's a piano teacher with a thriving studio based in the United Kingdom. She's also a photographer and recently completed the piano teacher's course over there in the UK. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Georgina Jordan.
You are very welcome, Tim. It's fabulous to be here.
Yeah, and it's great to reconnect. We last hung out. We were playing duets together in England.
We were. You saved the day when one of our group was ill. So, yeah, that was fabulous.
That was great fun. And that was part of the piano teacher's course where I came to spend some time with you guys.
Yeah.
It was really, really good. So lots has happened since then, and we'll get to a few of those things shortly. But can you give everyone a quick overview of your studio, where you're based firstly, numbers, sure. Do you teach groups, individual, and all that kind of stuff?
Okay, so I'm based in a very small town in Kent, which is south of London in the UK. I have currently 32 pupils, and I teach a whole mixture from half an hour to 1 hour lessons. So there's a nice difference within that. My little ones start with half an hour.
And all
mainly
levels.
Individual. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all levels. So I teach mainly individual lessons. I've just started doing a few more group-based things. So I have an adult duet group
right.
With a junior one hot on the heels coming up. I also run a piano meetup group, which is a monthly meetup group. So it's very much sort of social and performance opportunity. And I just do some little grade fun workshops because we're quite grade orientated here in the UK. So, yeah.
I can imagine the adults would love the duet program. I've got a couple of adult students and they just love doing two piano things and duet.
Yeah, mine love it. None of them have ever done it before in their lives, even if they've played the piano before. And so they were terrified to start with, but they really love it. And it benefits them so much.
And I'm sure
they really grow.
Yeah, and I'm sure if you add a little bit of wine and cheese, then everyone's happy, right?
Yeah, this is first thing in the morning, our duet group.
Oh, okay, maybe not then.
But so, the piano club, the meetup group, yeah.
Yeah, perfect. So you've been an Inner Circle member for about a year and a half now.
Yeah, I
what
have.
If you take us back, what can you remember what made you decide to join originally?
And
how you were feeling in your teaching?
Yeah, I mean, I was a very new teacher when I joined, and I listened to some of your podcasts and I'd seen some of your videos and I loved all of the resources that were available. And when I looked into it, I found that you offered courses, you offered quick wins, there was pop, improvisation, technology, I mean, everything. So that's why I joined.
Right.
And there's just... as everybody who's looked at your site will know, there's just a whole wealth of stuff on there. What I really liked was your explanations of everything, the how-to videos, the backup that I felt I had as a new teacher. So
fantastic.
It helped demystify a lot of things for me.
And it sounds like perhaps it gave you a bit of support, like you had a fallback and a place to ask questions.
Absolutely.
Give yourself more confidence.
It gave me a lot of confidence and to try out new things. And I will say the community within the Inner Circle is fantastic. I've met wonderful people from all over the world. We can just chat to each other. We can share ideas. I've learned so much from them, as well as obviously all the material that you've shared with us.
Fantastic.
So yeah, wonderful. Yeah.
No, that's brilliant. And how creative would you say your teaching was when you first started? Because you've come through, as most people know, in England, it does have a very traditional, tends to have a traditional exam-based system. Can you
very
rate yourself out of 10 when you began?
Probably about 4, maybe.
Okay, not too bad.
I would say, maybe.
Yeah. So you would have been doing some improvisation with your students, perhaps, a little bit of...
I was doing none. I was doing none. No improvisation at all. I was taught traditionally, so I didn't know really that that existed within normal piano lessons. I thought that that was reserved for jazz and blues musicians. So when I joined the Inner Circle, that was fantastic. Just a whole new world for me.
So the creativity that you were exploring back then was more related to the pieces that students were learning. And so the creativity is interpretation and dynamics and articulations and things like that. Is that
I was trying to find creative ways of teaching with the material that I had. But I was really struggling with that as a new teacher. It was difficult to know what to do and how to do that.
Fantastic. So one of the resources that you've shared some experiences with, and that's why I really wanted to connect with you today, is the resource that I've been talking about on today's podcast before we started this interview, and that's Notebook Beginners. And it's been one of my most popular frameworks, I call it, which is just exploring this let's not jump into a method book right at the start when we teach a new beginner student, and let's do some other stuff first. Method books are great, but maybe not for that first lesson. So could you tell me about your beginner approach before you started using the Notebook Beginners approach?
Yeah, I was method book, absolutely method book. And as I mentioned, trying to find creative ways of using the method book material, but not knowing how to do that at
all. How to structure it and things.
Yeah.
And what method were you using? And was that literally from lesson one?
From lesson one, I was using Piano Adventures or Piano Safari. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And interestingly enough, Piano Safari, of course, is one that I highly recommend. I love Piano Safari.
It's very creative.
Yeah, I was going to say, as far as method books go, it's about as creative as you can get. So I think that's a great approach. But then again, still those first few lessons, I just love some of these other things that we can do. What did you find the hardest thing about teaching beginners, I was going to say? I mean, you've mentioned that you weren't sure about the way to structure if you don't have a book in front of you. But what about this from the student's perspective? What were you finding that they perhaps might not have been doing or getting or experiencing when you did that approach?
I think... they were on the bench a lot, and I wanted to get them off the bench a lot more. I think they were not able to create their own music as early as I would have liked them to. Mm. I like the idea of them coming away in lesson one, knowing how to mess around on the keyboard. You know, it doesn't need to be so structured. It doesn't need to be page one of a book. Mm. You're actually giving them the tools in the first week to play at home. That was really important to me.
Yeah.
To give them that musical grounding and to have fun, actually.
I was going to say,
fun is just the most important thing.
Right. And it just makes it a little bit less serious, perhaps. Like, music should be a fun experience. So we don't have to crack the whip and get every single aspect of technique right from the first lesson. This is in my opinion, anyway. That will come. It's okay. It's more important to inspire. And I think it sounds like exactly what you're doing now.
Yeah, we have great fun with it. Mm. I've been using it since the minute it came out, as you know, and just loving it. And my pupils love it.
So tell us how the beginner lessons look now that you're using this approach.
Okay, so I do two different things depending on the student. With some, I will do the whole course. Mm-hmm. So the whole Notebook Beginners course and follow that. With some, I dip in and I use bits and pieces. It's according to how old they are. Like, for example, I've been teaching a four-year-old for the last year for the first time. So she wasn't able to do the whole course, but we used a lot of it and perhaps spent longer doing those things than you might have done with, say, a seven-year-old. Mm. So she just loved it. Things like the frog and snake game. We did every lesson.
It's so much fun, isn't it?
Yeah, and even the thunder showers as a rope piece. Mm. I did that, I think, on her first or second lesson, just so that she was playing. And she still plays it now, a year on. She will suddenly come in and say, "Do you remember this?" And she loves it. So that was great with the young beginners. I also ran... the improvisation side of it completely separately as a kind of holiday activity. So it was the around the world improvisation. So when all the pupils were exhausted from normal learning, we switched and included a lot of that. And I think I shared lots of the resources and the inner circle from that.
You did.
So we had
like
passports.
The Egyptian headdresses and things. That was
We had masks, headdresses, alien costumes. It was just wonderful. And we made stories. With each improvisation, we made a whole story. So they went home and they were able to create the story and use the improvisation.
That's a great, I actually, because that's not part of what I have necessarily specified as an idea, but, and this is why I love hearing from teachers who are using it, because you just take it and run with it and go, well, let's create a story around it. So did they actually write out, you know, in for people who aren't familiar with it, there's a series of around the world little motives that students are given each week. So one of them is Egypt, for example. So for one of those, would they go home and think about a story related to Egypt or whatever it was and use that as a basis for their improvisation?
Yeah, and it kind of it fed between the two, because we tested out a lot of ideas for, let's say, Egypt within the lesson based on your framework. So I showed them what was possible and just gave them a few little bits and pieces. We played around with it together. Then they had to go home and try and make a musical story, as it were. They would come back the following week and play me the musical story, and I had to guess what was going on.
Ah, oh, brilliant. Love it.
Then they would tell me if I wasn't right. But they were so creative. You know, we had thieves and robbers around pyramids, and we had sunset, and they completely blew me away with how they interpreted it. It was wonderful.
And that idea of picking the story actually picks up a thread from lesson one, I think, where we do the kind of the animal improv, where students see elephants and ants and tell a story high on the piano and low on the piano. So that's great that you're obviously continuing that idea on too.
Yeah, and I use that as well with my young beginners. They love that. So
that's brilliant. One of the other aspects I was really conscious of in creating the framework was providing things for students to do at home, because I think one of the hardest things for teachers who might be doing improvisation in lessons is knowing what to give students when there isn't a book to take home. So how have you found those activities working for practice time?
Yeah, I think it's been fantastic. With the Around the World improv, the parents have all got involved.
I was going to ask you about parents.
Yeah, which is exactly what we want. One of the sets of parents actually said to me, I wish I'd been taught like this. This is so creative. And she said, I wouldn't have given up the piano if my lessons had been like this. So, you know, we are starting something pretty amazing, I think. Well, you have.
Yeah. Well, and you guys are running with it, which is what I love.
Yeah. The other thing that the parents and the children love is the breakfast improv.
Oh, yeah.
That they can take home.
They ask
the whole family.
Give everyone quickly an overview. How does that work?
Well, basically, I play a blues scale underneath and I give them two notes, which is C and E flat. And they start just using those two notes. Mm-hmm. And I ask them what they had for breakfast. I might use your idea and tell them that I had bacon, eggs and smashed avocado and give them a rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They think the smashed avocado is hilarious. So then they come back.
Is that a thing in England like it is in Australia?
It kind of is now as a health thing, but my little ones haven't heard of it. So they think it's the funniest thing. They think I'm very strange, which is great.
Oh, that's great.
So then I ask them what they had for breakfast, but they go home and they come back saying they had pizza for breakfast so that they can actually fit it into their rhythm. But they've asked mum, they've asked dad, they've asked brothers and sisters, and they've made whole things. And again, they come back to it a year later. They will say, oh, that reminds me of the breakfast improv. And I say, can you remember it? And we then have some fun with that. So it all links. It's not just that one time. It feeds into everything else in their future, which is so great.
That's wonderful. Yeah. And I'll have to give a shout out to Paul Myatt, my good friend here in Australia, who created that breakfast improv and was very kind to let me include it. So thank you, Paul. There you go.
Thank you, Paul. I've met Paul.
Yes.
I did a workshop with Paul. So,
oh, fantastic. Yeah. So he, using some of those ORF concepts of starting with words. And then turning a chant or a word phrase into a rhythm and then moving on to an instrument or drums. You know, it's just such a great approach. I really loved enjoying it, including it.
They love it.
Now, you mentioned four-year-olds before. Was going to ask you about ages and abilities, because it sounds like you're using, while you might not use the whole sequence in order, which is great, you've picked and choose what you'd like to use for different ages. And we've also, got the preschool Notebook Beginners course.
Which I have seen.
Nicola has released. So she's kind of taken what I did and adapted it for preschoolers. Have you explored that one, or are you actually adapting it yourself?
No, I have now explored that, and that is, she's done a brilliant job. That is completely awesome. I wish I'd have had that version as well when I started with my little four-year-old, but the next four-year-old I start, then definitely. We'll be
doing
that. But
she's just so brilliant with all those kinds of things too.
She's fabulous with all of the games, and that has really helped. And she's a great support in the inner circle. She always comes back with fabulous ideas to any query, any problem.
I know she'll be listening, so thank you.
Will she? Hi, Nicola. Yes.
So if you could summarise it or pin down, what would you say would be the biggest benefit of using this approach? Could you kind of summarise it in one or even two things? I know it's going to be...
Using the whole course.
Yeah, of using just the notebook approach, I guess, in whatever way you use it.
Okay, I think it gives pupils the whole musical foundation that they need before getting onto the book.
Got it.
And that would be my one sentence.
What are some of those skills that you found that students benefit from having?
They're playing all over the keyboard. They have the confidence to create something on their own. They're improvising. There's no right or wrong. So they have freedom, which I really like, because as soon as you're tied to a book, they can feel a little bit restricted by that. So I love the freedom. They have a lot of fun from day one. They tell their friends who are not doing that.
I bet they do.
No, they absolutely do. I've been told about it. Yeah.
Well, that then becomes fantastic marketing. And I was actually going to ask you, as a business owner, do you feel that there has been any impact on your business or your studio numbers or engagement from this?
Yeah, I mean, student retention is really high. I'm very, very lucky in that I've had absolutely no problems with student retention at all.
And that's also because you're an amazing teacher, by the way, not because of my...
Well, it's amazing resources, I think, Tim. Right. But yeah, I'm really lucky in that I get most of my work from recommendation. So I think something like this creative approach initially makes all the difference, because children are coming home really happy, telling their parents what fun they had in piano lessons, immediately being able to show them what they can do. Parents are happy. They can see their child's enjoying and learning. So it's a win-win. As a teacher, it's all great fun to use. So,
yeah, it's important that we have fun. I mean, who wants to be miserable and bored?
Yeah, and that our energy has such an impact on our pupils. So if we're loving what we're teaching, then they love learning it and probably don't realize they're learning, to be honest.
Yeah, well, that's the ultimate, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what would you say to a teacher who might be listening and feeling a bit stuck in the method book routine and feeling like they're teaching the same way? What would you say?
I would say put the fear to one side. Take that leap, but maybe take a small leap to start with. Just take one thing, like the Around the World improv, and run that. Or take the frog and snake game with your little ones and just put that in. And in no time at all, you'll have all of these resources up your sleeve to just pull out when you need them. then you'll feel ready to do the whole course. Tim has made it so easy to follow the course. It's the most user-friendly thing. So there's nothing to be scared of.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah. I think that advice is true for any new thing we do in our studios, really. Just try something once and try one thing at a time and see how it goes. And then as you get more confidence, you can try the next thing. And that's why I think a framework like this is great, because as you say, you can pick and choose and do this and don't do that. And you could, even if you're a little bit more timid, you can keep teaching with your method book from that first lesson, but just throw in something, as you say, that's a little bit more off the page as you get used to it. So great advice.
Yeah, and just test it out. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So wonderful. Now I'll have to ask you as a follow-up, what do you rate your creativity as a teacher now?
Oh yeah. Very high now. I would say probably 9 or 10. Wow. I think I probably drive my students mad with it all.
Brilliant.
And certainly the parents with all the stuff I send home. But
I love it. Well, look, you've got some great new experiences yourself coming up. You've recently, well, tell us about it. Tell us about just some of the things that you're doing as a result of some of this, the new ways of teaching and being on the Piano Teachers course. What's happening for you now? We were talking about it just before I hit record.
Yeah, I'm really lucky in that I'm about to be published in Piano Professional magazine. I wrote an article about using imagination and the inner image in teaching. So it links in very nicely to all the creativity in the Notebook Beginners course. I think I quoted you actually somewhere in that article.
Ooh. We'll have to check it out. So ask Murray if you're able to share it with us in the inner circle. I'm sure others would love to read it.
Yeah, I'm very happy to share that. I'm sure that would be fine. So that, I've also been asked to guest blog for Graham Fitch's Practicing the Piano blog. So I'm very honoured to be doing that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another good friend. And for people who are interested in those practice tips, I think I'd be right in saying it's very much for serious musicians or students and teachers who are practicing the repertoire and trying to get really good at it. His blog, Practicing the Piano, is second to none.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I've got that coming up.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
I've also been invited.
Training, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm doing another course this year. So it's the follow-up to the PTC course. They're running a teaching dip, so the ABRSM teaching diploma course this year. So I've just joined that, and that's a lot of fun.
I'm exhausted already just hearing all this.
Yes, so am I just thinking about it.
That's brilliant. Well, look, thank you, Georgina, so much. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on here, and I know you will have inspired many through your stories and just hearing all that you have done and you're planning to do. I think it's just it's inspiring.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful to be part of this.
Oh, that's brilliant. Well, look, I'll let you go to bed. I know it's late there tonight. So
thank you so much.
I'll see you inside the circle, and I really appreciate your time today. Thanks.
You're so welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Georgina as much as I did. How cool was the idea of adding stories as well, like written stories, to the Around the World improvs? I thought that was a great idea. And you could even expand that and get students to draw and perhaps colour pictures. It could expand into even a half-day activity for a summer camp or a group program. The possibilities for this framework are only limited by your own imagination, and it gives me such a buzz to see what other teachers are doing with some of these simple ideas that I present. Georgina is just such a great example of how I love teachers using all my resources, and that's creatively. I'm not the only person with creative ideas. All of you out there, whether you think it or not, are creative and have the possibility to do some of these activities with your students. And sometimes it just takes that little spark that you can get from one of these downloads to take you on an amazing journey with your students. So pull these resources apart, adapt them, add new ideas, and then, as Georgina did, please share them with us and let us know how you went. So here's actually what Georgina shared about her Egypt improv with the other members of the Inner Circle community. She said, following my four-week challenge, so every so often we run a four-week, it's a month-long challenge for members where they set and achieve goals and journal their progress towards them over the course of the 4 weeks. So that was what four-week challenge means. She says, following my four-week challenge, I decided to try an around-the-world improv project for all my young beginners this half term in preparation for summer groups. I'm really new to improv, so it's a bit of a leap for me, but I've been practicing it myself and having far too much fun before trialing it with my pupils. Today, it was day one, and it's going down a storm. We had so much fun. Somehow, I managed to improvise semi-confidently, and we now have world passports. And a huge thanks to Jacinta, she says, who's another member, for sharing the passport she created for Around the World Improv. A5 mini card scrapbooks for as much Egypt-related, Egypt is one of our around-the-world themes, related creativity as they can imagine. We listen to original Arabian music as well as film themes such as Ali Baba, Arabian Nights, etc. I resisted the temptation to include the Bangles' Walk Like an Egyptian. Best of all, we have Egyptian pharaoh headdresses for them to colour and make at home and wear to the next lessons to play to wear while they play their improvisations. And she gives us the template for the Egyptian pharaoh headdresses. So you can get access to all these kinds of things, the pharaoh headdresses, the passports that Jacinta created, and of course, see the cutest picture of one of Georgina's students wearing both the pharaoh headdress and the biggest grin I've ever seen in a photo in our Inner Circle forums. And in fact, the Around the World Improv activities are one of the most popular aspects of this approach. So let me share just a couple of the other experiences teachers are having with building their students' improvisation skills from the start, from scratch, with really little training themselves or little experience. And that's a great thing about these improv activities. You can learn them along with your students. And here's what they've said. So Wendy said, happy to let you know, my young students are putting books to one side and doing stuff like making up animal stories such as elephant and ants. One girl made her elephant suck up all the ants with a big glissando. Such fun. Thank you. And Juanita said, oh, and I did want to say to Tim Topham that the improvising activity on the two black notes, which is in lesson one or two, was also amazing. One of my little ones, who is highly creative and almost goes into an asthmatic fit if I try and conform her in any way, using the correct finger technique, was just incredible in improvising with the two black note blues. She already is creating songs that reflect her various moods or animals or stories. And she's a singing student who just likes to tinkle on the piano for a while before we do the singing. So I've learned to listen and allow her to go with what she feels, so long as she's enjoying it and wants to keep coming back. This approach is so unlike me, as I come from a very traditional method to learning music, as most of us have. Can you relate? Here's what Sarah said regarding that Egyptian improv that we've been talking about. While my Monday boy was having difficulties, my Thursday 8-year-old had a great time. He came rushing up to me at recess at school to tell me about his Egyptian music. I took a video in the lesson and was so proud of him. He chatted all the way through. This is the snake, and here's the even dangerouser snake. He made up the words here and there, which he chanted in rhythm. He told me, this is the really scary part. He reused motives in logical ways. Wow. I'd show you the video, but I haven't asked permission yet. Perhaps even the most surprising thing was when he told me that he didn't do much practice from the tutor book because he was too busy making up his song. And I replied, that's fantastic. Progress. And finally, from Timothy this time. It's been really cool getting on your site. I've been loving your Notebook Beginners course, which I'm using to teach a second grade boy. We are going to be doing our fourth lesson this week. What's great is that he's really enjoying it, and apparently he practices a lot without needing anyone to tell him to. And from word of mouth, another mum asked me today to teach her son. I want to let you know that I'm really glad I came across your website. And I think you're doing great stuff by making this piano teacher's community. And I personally am really loving the Notebook Beginners course. Tim's comment just reiterates what Georgina said about retention, engagement, and word of mouth, and how your lesson content and teaching strategy can have a huge effect on your marketing, and it can be a really strong marketing lever in your studio. So if you've got a challenge with a lot of other teachers in your area and high competition, then this can be a great way to differentiate yourself as a piano teacher by teaching in this more creative and engaging and deeply educational way where students can learn without even realizing it, and parents can both get involved and instantly see the value, because then you'll automatically start setting yourself apart from the competition in your area. I really hope you do try out this approach. You can watch me teach the first three lessons totally free at timtopham.com/beginners. And you can even download the first lesson plans to get you started for free. We also have a preschool version of the no-book approach, which will take students through the same framework, but going right down to very, very young. So under sevens, we've got a preschool version approach. It's got lots of games and fun activities on and off the bench, and using the same framework, the same ideas, but created for a younger age group.
So if you found today's episode enjoyable and you could see how that no-book approach could work in your studio, then do come and join our pro membership at topmusicpro.com. And you can get access to the full no-book beginner course, all the videos of me teaching it and showing you how to do things, all the full lesson plans. And of course, as a pro member, you get access to another 32 other courses about business and teaching that will set you up for incredible success in 2021. So do head over there now. Come and join us if you haven't already. It's at topmusicpro.com. Next week, I've got another favorite episode. We are talking about practice and, in fact, why practice just might be killing your studio business. If you've felt the practice burden as a teacher before, or even as a parent, then you're going to want to tune in next week when we're talking with Danny Thompson. Can't wait to share that with you then. See you, everyone.
For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.